It's time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. It's a discussion segment about things happening on and in the media. And in a world of both mass and personalized media, there's always a lot to talk about. We do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from social media to books. Half of our regular panel is here. That is Christopher Lucas from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Welcome back, Chris.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
And sitting in once again this month for Victoria Sama is Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, an assistant professor of journalism and mass communication at Humboldt State University. Jesse, thanks for coming in once again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with a tale of media engagement changing greatly between 2020 and 2021. Some numbers that Axios put out recently from a number of different sources indicate that media engagement fell off a cliff, that the stuff that we were watching so closely in 2020, namely the presidential election and the initial rise of COVID-19, we just weren't as tuned in as much in the year 2021. Does that surprise either of you? Jesse, let's start with you.
Not surprised at all, though I think what was more surprising than the decline in 2021 was that uptick in 2020, because news engagement actually had been on a decline, at least engagement with traditional news media following what I would call sort of real news stories, right? We got into this era of fake news, of course, but really paying attention to what was going on in the world around us was on the decline over the last 10 years. And then we got that big uptick, of course, with COVID and with Trump and things like that, where we were all sort of, you know, hyper-tuned into it and our media diets really changed. And so the drop-off, though, as far as I can see in the research that that has been done so far on it, is really a lot of it's about news fatigue. So that term meaning, like, yes, we're kind of burnt out on these specific topics. And then you also think about that the idea of news being new, right? Like, as simple as that is, it's what's new.
Yeah.
And so when we're hearing about COVID, yes, there's new things coming up all the time. We've got Omicron, all these things going on. But with that news fatigue, it's starting to sound the same. And some people might have even noticed that in 2020, it was like, that's all we were hearing about. And it was from every different angle. And it was actually great that journalists were covering it from so many different angles. But I know even myself, you know, I'm an avid news consumer, just personally. And then I teach media as my day job, you know, so I have to be tuned into that. And even for myself, I hit that news fatigue where I was like, oh no, have to do it again. And then, of course, on the other end of that, as you mentioned, Trump being a big thing that people were following, for whether it was because people were genuinely interested in the politics or just the sort of rubbernecking on the insanity of it all. People were super into that. And then, of course, that started to get kind of old as well. And I know that most NPR affiliates actually covered yesterday the first interview on NPR with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And even for myself, I was tuned in. I wanted to know, what was he going to do on NPR? My goodness. And of course, those of you who were listening, or those of your listeners who were tuned in, he hung up really quickly, and that was that. But it still made news all day long, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's a phenomenon that we've definitely seen. Not super surprising, though.
Yeah, and that is a good point to bring up, especially the fact that the NPR made a lot of the fact that what was supposed to be a 12 to 15 minute interview ended up at 9 minutes long. Chris Lucas, what do you make of this trend then? I mean, is it disaster fatigue or just big drama fatigue?
Well, that certainly seems to be part of it. And, you know, just the presence of a lot of highly polarizing topics in 2020, which is sort of what the comparison was in Axios between 2020 and 2021. There was, you know, the Supreme Court nomination, the election, the culmination of the George Floyd case. Like, all these were very, very polarizing topics. I also think another dynamic we're thinking about is just that, you know, the difference between an election year and a non-election year is significant, right? That there's the Gallup organization has done more longitudinal work on this question going back decades, and just noting how, like, our attention, the Americans' attention to national political news varies a lot year to year. And so during an election year, you know, Americans will report, you know, 40 to 50% will say, yeah, we are watching the news closely. If you ask the same question The next year, that's down to like 30% or under. So there's some just variation that have to do with this the national political scene.
We are talking to Christopher Lucas and Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein in this month's edition of Signals and Noise, our media segment. You're welcome to join into the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's latch on to another topic here, and it's partly about the revelations over the last month about Fox News hosts texting Mark Meadows when he was the White House chief of staff on January 6th of 2021 to call off the Capitol attack. The committee revealed this. And as I want to take it not just on the fact that you had people in the news business or ostensibly in the news business working for a place called Fox News, let's put it that way, attempting to have direct conversations with newsmakers to influence events potentially, but also a contrast here between Fox News and nothing happening to those people and Chris Cuomo getting fired from CNN for his involvement in his brother, Andrew Cuomo, the ex-governor of New York's defense against sexual misconduct allegations. Chris, why don't you start this one off?
Sure. I mean, you know, my take on this is a bit of a pox on both houses. I'm so surprised it took CNN so long to respond to Cuomo situation. I think in terms of the difference, I think what we're really seeing is, you know, it's kind of a symptom of the different ways that journalists feel they have to treat these different domains. I mean, sexual harassment and the behavior of Andrew Cuomo is something that's very much top of mind, and there's a pretty set series of kind of reactions and kinds of stories that are being written about that and consequences. And something that's in the realm of politics, it gets a little dicier, right? And journalists want to be a little bit at arm's length and be careful about reporting that and then just sort of how justice is meted out. I think just to back up a step and a half, I think what's more disturbing to me is really about this interlock of media personalities and politics, right? These commentators that are on Fox News, and I don't call them journalists, they're more like entertainers. Mm-hmm. They all have Mark Meadows on their mobile device, apparently, right? And they're sort of in constant conversation. So that itself, I think, should give us some pause. That revolving door that we've seen, and it goes, you know, both ways and both sides of the political aisle, of people going from White House to media career and back and kind of connecting that way. I think that, that's sort of troubling.
Right. And a couple of examples there, too, come to think of it, as Kayleigh McEnany was the last White House press secretary, came straight from Fox News, and when the administration was over, went right back to Fox News. Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein, your thoughts on this realm?
Yeah, just going off of what Chris mentioned in those different domains, I think that's really important to consider, not just from the end of, you know, the politicians and the journalists and all that, but from the end of the public and public opinion and really what the public in this country is paying attention to. There, you'll see a lot more stories and a lot more stories going viral on the end of, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault, with the general public. And it's a very specific public that's actually really paying close attention to the politics that are happening in this country. And I mean that sincerely, and like the real paying attention, not the just reading the headlines or seeing what's popping up on your social media news feed. And so I think there's a huge difference there in public opinion and then what's going to come out of that.
All right, so let's move on to a more local topic here, and that is we talked to the folks at Ashland.news not long ago, Bert Ettling, the editor, and Herb Rothschild, one of the board members for Ashland.news. It's a chance to replace a lost local newspaper, the Ashland Daily Tidings, out of business. Their planned startup is tomorrow. Chris, you're right in the middle of this in Ashland. What do you make of new journalism sites cropping up with new business models?
Well, I mean, I'm a very big supporter of local news and a lot of news outlets in particular. Really glad to see something come in that can replace the important role that the Ashland Tidings had for many years. And Bert Ettling was for a long time associated with the Ashland Tidings, so some of the long local history. The nonprofit model, I mean, there's a lot of conversation these days about the emergence of nonprofit journalism as a way to replace the longstanding commercial model, primarily advertiser-supported. You know, I always like to sort of point out there's a lot of really respected, valuable, long-time nonprofit journalism in our society already, you know, from examples like NPR and PBS and even the AP, right, which is a sort of umbrella news co-op that so many outlets rely on. That's a nonprofit. So, I mean, the nonprofit model has a long history. I think the new wrinkle here is because of the thinning out and the collapse of the commercial business model on the local level, we've got to find some new solution. And nonprofits, that model applied at the local level, is getting a lot of support, a lot of grant money kind of flowing into that area. And so I'm quite excited about it, actually. I wish Ashland.news a lot of good fortune and hope we can support them in however we can through the university and helping students find their way over there to gain experience.
Jesse Kretzer, Hartenstein, let's get your perspective with a footnote here that Humboldt Bay has been traditionally rather well supplied with media outlets, TV stations. There were two daily newspapers for quite some time, certainly a number of weeklies, et cetera.
Yeah, we've been very blessed in Humboldt County for that specific thing. And I actually, I was just recently reading a report that was put out by one of our nonprofit media outlets around here. I shouldn't even call it a media outlet, a media organization, because they do a lot more than just sort of getting news out there. And that's Access Humboldt. So Access Humboldt actually, I think it was in 2019, they teamed up with Internews, which is a huge nonprofit, again, a media organization, not putting news out there, but helping bring news and information and set up media organizations around the world, usually in areas that are sort of lacking in humanity or in developing nations. Anyway, so they got together and they put together an information ecosystem assessment of Humboldt County. And one of the main findings was that in Humboldt County, we actually have a lot of local media and we have, we are very well informed in many ways. However, aside from Access Humboldt, we sort of had this weird decline in our nonprofit media because our NPR affiliate that was based out of Humboldt State University, which was KHSU, stopped having local programming. They're definitely in transition right now and they're starting to bring some of it back. But there was a huge, there's sort of a huge backlash in our community because people wanted and needed that community aspect of the local nonprofit journalism, and then suddenly it was gone. So not even just from the nonprofit side, but really that localized the localized news and information that people sort of need. And as Chris mentioned, there was this sort of collapse in the traditional corporate larger media landscape. And some of the only newspapers that survived and to some degree even thrived were the ones that were bringing the hyper-local news to smaller communities. And so we have a little bit of that in the corporate land as well. We have things like Lost Coast Outpost, which is probably one of our most popular media outlets, but it's not a nonprofit. People really needed that, and they started to turn to, like, in disasters. I know with Jefferson Public Radio, you know, when the fires are happening, Jeffrey, you were right there, you know, giving people information, letting people know where to find resources, while it was happening. And so when we had things like our big power outages a couple years ago and, people needed information, they were starting to turn to the actual, you know, traditional for-profit stations just because there was someone live sitting there in the studio that could help deliver that information. So it is super important, and I'm super excited as well to find out about what's happening in Ashland with the local nonprofit journalism coming to town.
All right, yeah. The launch date at Ashland.news is supposed to be tomorrow, January 14th. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. Jesse Kretzer Hartenstein is an assistant professor of journalism and mass communication at Humboldt State University. Chris Lucas from the communication faculty at Southern Oregon University. And you got something you want to chime in on from what you've been hearing so far. Join the conversation on the Exchange with your phone call to 800-838-3760 or your email to jx@jeffnet.org. So This has been the big journalism week. Let me lump it in a little bigger here with a couple of other stories here. The legal battle between Project Veritas, which has been kind of a gotcha journalism outfit coming from the right wing, and the New York Times, which has some documents about the way that Project Veritas works. A judge says do not publish, but an appeals court told the Times that it can at least keep the documents for now. So that's been interesting. And then in addition to that, the Chinese crackdown on media in Hong Kong, where independent voices in journalism are just saying, forget it, we can't do this with the way Chinese laws have been imposed on the former British colony. And so what was taken for granted as free media that was supposed to stay free well into the 2040s, based under the 1997 handback of Hong Kong to China, has just come undone. So in a real broad sense, though, these three items together, you know, local journalism, going nonprofit, whether you can release information you've got in hand, which is an issue for the New York Times, and the Chinese crackdown on press in Hong Kong, you've got an issue where journalism was already hard, but now there's even less money and more attempts at government interference. How endangered is journalism around the world? Jesse, why don't you start it?
Yeah, this is a tough one. So I've turned first to in the United States, actually, in comparison. So I'll bring it back to the academic side of it a little bit. I teach international mass communication and we do a lot is sit around and compare and contrast, you know, different countries, their press systems, and then how that we have a democracy without the Fourth Estate, yada, yada, yada. Having said that, if you look at Reporters Without Borders, they put out every year a press freedom index. So the last one that they put out was in 2021, and the United States ranks at 44 on that index, which is pretty astonishing, since we often tend to think that we are very, you know, we have a very free press, and we're very proud of that, of course. But then you look at some other countries on there and see what's going on. And then, of course, you know, China ranking down at 177, and, you know, Hong Kong being wrapped up in having that the freedoms, and then the freedoms taken away. And so, you know, not to be an alarmist, but I think we've seen over the past, you know, over the past 5 years, at least in this country, something that we probably thought we would never see between, you know, the Capitol insurrection and fake news and all these things that we probably completely took for granted as well. So in some ways, you know, the writing's on the wall, and that's all. So there's hope in that, because a lot of us are seeing it, and we're seeing even these, you know, the new nonprofits popping up with local journalism and really well done reporting and things like that. So there's, you know, there is another side to it, and there's this sort of emerging market and emerging. Another side, some of the stories that you mentioned with it being kind of stripped and taken away, and really, like, we can't take that for granted that we have had a free press. Year after year, you know, I can just watch us go down on the Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index in this country. And when other countries have come up and changed, it's not static at all. You know, governments change, and of course, having that information. I think one of the biggest things in, you know, sort of lumping those very different stories together is what you will see across the world with different press systems and societies. Is, of course, if there is something like the Capitol insurrection, but we have reporters out there, we have citizen journalists out there, we are actually sharing that information, it's going to be a much different outcome than the countries that, when things like that happen or when a coup happens, that they shut off media communication, that they throw reporters in jail, that they shut down, communicate via social media, completely different outcomes. So I think that's sort of something that we can take from that looking forward, and then put our energy into hopefully more nonprofit journalism and things like that, and hopefully not keep dropping down that that press freedom index.
Yeah, I don't want to go below 44. Let's keep shooting a little higher there. Chris, what do you think?
Another part of that Reporters Without Borders report, 75% of countries, by their measure, are kind of, you know, backsliding with complete or partly blocking journalism. We have more reporters in jail than in decades. So I think this is absolutely an issue. And I think I would just point people, maybe I'll make this one of my pick threes, but, you know, Maria Ressa, who is the founder of Rappler, which is this independent journalist outlet in the Philippines, recently won the Nobel Prize and gave an amazing speech, which was a real sort of call to action and warning about this very issue, the rise of authoritarian governments, democratic backsliding across the world. But an interesting kind of angle, you know, she talks about both government interference in an authoritarian context, but also government inaction, right, in liberal democracies. And she's really pointing out how, you know, the business models of a lot of these tech companies are, you know, in many ways working against the free flow of accurate information that works in the public interest. And she, you know, she thinks there needs to be something done about the power of the global power, right, of these technology companies. I think what we do actually about that is a pretty complex question, and the speech is inspiring, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily have a lot of solutions. But I think really does a great job of recognizing the moment we are in history and the need to respond.
Okay, I can give you each 30 seconds for your pick threes for the month. You want to make Maria one of your pick threes, Chris?
Sure, and I'll just mention The Expanse is ending this week. This is an amazing kind of complex world, hard sci-fi series I've been a big fan of. It's the last week for them. The whole series is wrapping up. It's on Amazon Prime. And then a documentary, The Rescue, which is about the Thai cave rescue
in
2018, an amazing documentary.
Okay, so there are Chris's pick threes. Jesse, you got a pick three for January?
I do, yeah. I've got a read and a listen to and a follow. So the read, and maybe this will help other people as well, there's a book called The Stoic Challenge by William Irvine. The full title of it is The Stoic Challenge, a Philosopher's Guide to Becoming Tougher, Calmer, and More Resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Super interesting, and we probably all need that in this day and age, and especially, you know, going through a pandemic and all that. And that leads me into my listen, which is probably lots of your listeners are also tuned into Hidden Brain, the Hidden Brain podcast,
mm-hmm.
Which is where I heard about that book. So love it when things all come together in that way. And then a story that I'm following is actually prison reform and education. At Humboldt State University, we just recently brought in Project Rebound, which helps formerly incarcerated students. And so I've been kind of watching that and then watching how COVID has really had a sort of negative impact on education within prison systems.
Okay, we'll put links to all these up. Thanks so much to Chris Lucas and Jesse Kretzer-Hartenstein for this month's Signals and Noise. This is JPR.